Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Good morning, and thank you for listening today. A great number of Americans, I would hope a majority, are deeply concerned about moral and spiritual conditions in the United States. We know about the enormous increase in the consumption of alcohol, about the use of illegal drugs and the abuse of prescription drugs, about the millions and millions of babies who have been aborted in the past 25 years, and about the practice of homosexuality. We also know about the scandal of divorce in our nation, and the millions of children who are deprived of one parent, or in some cases, both parents. We understand to some extent the breakdown of our criminal justice system. Thousands of criminals are being released from our prison system to kill and to rape and to plunder. Many judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys seem to have little interest in justice. They just want to win. If you read the papers regularly, or if you listen to prominent politicians, either on television or on radio, you have heard hundreds of solutions to the problems we face in this great country. Every politician, especially if he happens to be running for some office at the time, has the solution to whatever problems arise. The media also have solutions, generally the same that liberal politicians have. The American Civil Liberties Union knows what to do about every ill which plagues our nation. In addition to the combined wisdom of politicians, the media, and the American Civil Liberties Union, liberal professors in our colleges and universities have their approaches to teenage pregnancy, to the breakup of the home, and to other tragic situations in this country. The proposals of the groups I have mentioned have been tried for years. For example, the political, educational, and media people have spoken in somber tones of the increase in teenage pregnancies. Not that they're concerned about human life, but the economics of the situation brings financial hardship on so many people. If they were concerned about human life, they would support a ban on abortion. But to remedy the tragedy of teenage pregnancies, the liberal establishment has pressured the government to require sex education at all levels of schools, from kindergarten through the university. Where those recommendations have been followed, and they have in several jurisdictions, the situation has gotten worse. Young people, in most cases, have been taught the mechanics of sex, but without any moral values. The young people were not taught to abstain from sexual activity until they married, but to be careful so as not to have children or to contract a venereal disease. Are young people so dumb or so naive that they do not get the message our government is sending? They are being told, in effect, it is not morally wrong to have sex, either heterosexual or homosexual, but do be careful. Our nation, like all other nations from the beginning of time, has had its share of poor, disabled, and distraught people. So what does the government suggest as to the solution to problems relating to the unfortunate? We must declare a war on poverty. So the war was declared, and today the situation is immeasurably worse than before. As a nation, we have fed poor people, but have not taught them how to escape poverty. In fact, we have developed a class of people in the United States who have not worked, do not know how to work, and have no intention of learning. Our efforts obviously have helped some, but they have hurt many more. Governmental handouts do not provide long-term solutions. Why people in our state governments and in Washington do not have the good sense to understand that is beyond most Americans. Why do people become less perceptive when they go to Washington? Is there really a disease called Potomac fever? Apparently, the majority of liberal politicians, university professors, and even theologians are seeking to solve America's moral and spiritual problems by political measures. Whenever serious situations arise in the United States, we pressure our political leaders to pass new legislation or new regulations. In many cases, the new legislation or the new regulations make little or no difference in the nation's moral tone. In some cases, the conditions are worse because of the political solutions. My friends, I'm not arguing against changes in our laws when they need changing. I certainly am not suggesting that we should not vote or be concerned about what occurs in our state capitals and in Washington. When you are disturbed about a proposed piece of legislation, you have a moral obligation to write or to call your congressman. You should speak out against any activity or any person which will cause moral values to deteriorate in this nation. If a candidate for office, any office, is a liar, an adulterer, a homosexual, an abortion supporter, or a feminist, use your vote to make a difference. I believe Christians have an obligation to use their time and talent to work in every legitimate way for the betterment of our communities and of our nation. But there are many ways to accomplish worthy goals other than through political means. In fact, it is my strong conviction that spiritual problems cannot be solved by political solutions. Yes, we definitely need laws which prohibit racial and other forms of discrimination. But the laws by themselves will not remove racism. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. fully understood that. But he wanted laws which would keep little children from being killed by racists, and to give all men and women equal opportunities to achieve their life's goals. If spiritual problems cannot be solved, at least, not completely, by political means, where can solutions be found? The answer to that question will occupy the remainder of our time today. The place to start in preventing teenage pregnancy, stopping the cruel practice of killing babies in their mother's wombs, destroying illicit drug traffic in the United States, and discouraging illegitimate discrimination is the home. You heard me right, dear friends. The place to start in opposing evil and supporting good is the home. When the home fails, the other institutions of society are not likely to succeed. K. Coles James is Secretary of Health and Human Services for the state of Virginia. She served in the White House during the Bush administration and has been a spokesman for many years for the National Right to Life Committee. Her new book, Transforming America from the Inside Out, has a great amount of valuable information on the family's influence on society. She and her husband, Charles, were invited to go to the former Soviet Union to speak about families. She said that the Russian leaders to whom she talked realized that they could not build a strong economy if they did not have strong families. One man said to Kay, "Our economic system will work in the future if, as we have learned from our past, our people are honest, strong, and good. Unless we change our present course, we will fail in our social and economic reforms, and the world will fail with us. Contracts will mean nothing unless people honor them. The education system will not work unless people value education and love the children they teach. The military will not work unless people understand honor and sacrificial love of country. There is only one place," he said, "where such values can be taught, the family. I know because for nearly two-thirds of my life, I have tried to instill those values through the state and through the government, through order and through law. And I have failed, and we have failed." Page 59. If families are going to help in the solution of the moral and spiritual problems we face, they must make sure that children are taught biblical moral values. They must take their children to the services of the church, not just send them. Parents must exemplify the principles they want to see in their children's lives. K. James tells the story of one of America's and the world's best neurosurgeons, Dr. Ben Carson, who at the age of 33 was chief of pediatric neurology at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Carson grew up in a neighborhood where violence of all kinds proliferated. His mother had to work at two or three jobs to keep her children fed and clothed. She decided her children could watch television only two or three times each week, and only if they had read and completed two book reports. Ben Carson at first resented his mother's rules, but soon he began to be excited about what he was reading. Ben was admitted to Yale University and to the University of Michigan. Dr. Carson made these comments about his own family. "I don't want my kids to grow up with no father as I did. I came to the conclusion a while ago that you can work until midnight and not be finished, or you can work until 6 or 7 and not be finished. I decided I'd rather work until 6 or 7. Pages 91 and 92. Dr. Carson credits his mother and his education for his attainments. Page 85. "If we are going to solve the spiritual problems in America, we must have radical changes in America's homes. Our children must be taught the differences between right and wrong. They must be taught there are absolutes. Otherwise, they will do what seems best to them on the spur of the moment. We see almost daily pictures on television or in the newspapers of young people who have committed the most vicious crimes, not to protect themselves, but because they wanted another child's expensive shoes or jewelry or automobile. Many of these young criminals show absolutely no remorse for the heinous deeds they perpetrated. In fact, some of them act as if they have done a good deed for society by killing children or old people. The hardness of some of these young hoodlums defies the imagination. What happened in our society to produce such unconscionable behavior? When the children were born, they were somebody's pride and joy, sweet and innocent, just like all other babies born into the world. But they did not have the love and discipline which all children must have if they are to grow into decent men and women. The greatest teaching parents can do is by example. Children need to see in their homes parents who are devoted to each other and devoted to their children. One prominent writer of books for young people says, the best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. Children must see in their parents what it means to be a good husband and a good wife. That is one of the reasons why single parenting is such a disaster for hundreds of thousands of children in the United States. The father should be a model of what it means to be a husband and a father. The mother has similar responsibilities. If parents want to provide an atmosphere where children can have respect for God, they must themselves be examples of godly behavior, and they must teach their children. No passage in the Bible teaches that truth more plainly than these verses. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligently unto your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them upon the posts of your house and on your gates." Deuteronomy 6, 4-9. While these words were written under the Mosaic Covenant, they are meaningful for all of us. Paul said very succinctly, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord." Ephesians 6, 4. If we are going to solve the spiritual and moral problems which confront us as a nation, we will have to begin in the home. We will have to bring God's Word into our daily lives and into the lives of our children. There really is no other way, regardless of what the politicians say. The government should not be in the business of trying to rear the nation's children. God has made it plain through His Word that civil governments have great responsibilities, but one of those is not trying to rear our children. K. James mentions the fact that some in the United States think we ought to turn our children over to the government and let the government take care of them. She makes this observation, "But the village cannot raise a child. Children don't belong to the community. Children belong to their parents who tuck them in at night, wipe away their tears, feed them their meals, and answer their questions. If the past 30 years have taught us anything, it is that stable two-parent families are the foundation of the village." Pages 7 and 8. K. James quotes these wise words from Bill Galston, President Clinton's domestic policy advisor. "The economic consequences of a parent's absence are often accompanied by psychological consequences, which include higher than average levels of youth suicide, low intellectual and educational performance, and a higher than average rates of mental illness, violence, and drug abuse." Pages 59 and 60. But what about the church's influence in the transforming of America? Families have the major responsibility for changing the moral and spiritual values of Americans. The government certainly has an obligation to make these changes as easy as possible, although the government has a more limited sphere of operation than either the home or the church. What can and should the church do in helping families and communities? Tragically, many churches have made so many compromises with the culture of our times that they have precious little positive influence for good. When bishops, preachers, rabbis, and priests fail to preach the truth of God's Word, the nation is in for some rough sledding. Bishop John Shelby Spong has attempted to convince a whole generation that there are no absolute moral values. He tells his audiences that fornication is not always wrong. Homosexuality is another legitimate lifestyle, and we cannot be certain about the truth. Has not Bishop Spong and similar liberal theologians joined forces with secular humanism to destroy the very foundation of moral and spiritual values? The sad truth is that liberal theologians do far more damage than the humanists, atheists, agnostics, and other unbelievers. We expect the unbelievers to attack the Bible and New Testament Christianity. That is their main reason for being. But when men claim to love God, His Word, and His Son, turn their guns on the Scriptures, many young people sit up and listen. As a consequence of the unbelief being promoted by preachers and other theologians, young people lose their faith in God, if they ever had any, and turn to drugs, violence, sexual promiscuity, and other forms of evil. Even those churches and theologians who claim to be evangelical or fundamentalist have often failed to take the Bible and New Testament Christianity seriously. Kay Coles cites a national survey conducted by Barna Associates of California. When surveyed, the majority of the American public rejects the notion of absolute truth, does not believe in the God described in the Bible, does not believe that Satan is a real being, believes all faiths teach basically the same thing, and does not believe it matters what God they pray to, because every deity is ultimately the same deity, shrouded in different names and attributes of humankind. Page 77. Many evangelicals occupy the same position as the liberal theologians and as the people of the world. Are you aware that many of our founding fathers believed in God and argued that no nation could be strong without that faith? George Washington commented, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish them. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education, reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of a religious people." Politicians who talk like that would be accused in modern times of violating the separation of church and state. They would be stigmatized by being accused of belonging to the religious right. John Adams also understood the connection between freedom and devotion to God. Statesmen, he said, may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion and morality alone which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue. Finally, these words from Thomas Jefferson, a deist, should be enlightening. And can liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm foundation, the conviction in the minds of people that these liberties are a gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with His wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that His justice cannot sleep forever. If Thomas Jefferson were alive today, what would be his reaction to some of the recent decisions of the United States Supreme Court? Would he tremble when the Supreme Court decided that a verbal prayer in a public school is unconstitutional? Would he tremble when our government guarantees freedom of speech and press to everyone in our public schools, except the students who want to talk about religion? How would Jefferson react when he learned that communism, Hinduism, the New Age movement, and other radical worldviews can be promoted in the public schools, but not Christianity? Would his so-called wall of separation allow for such discrimination against Christianity? If churches are going to be a part of the solution to our moral and spiritual problems, they must not try to build and operate by the world's standards and wishes. One church has advertised a new church service designed for those who've given up on traditional services. Let's face it, the advertisement says, many people aren't active in church these days. Why has the church decided to jazz up its services to harmonize with the wishes and desires of the baby boomers and the baby busters? This is the explanation according to the advertisement. Too often, the sermons are boring and don't relate to daily living. Many churches seem more interested in your wallet than in you. You wonder about the quality of nursery care for your children. The church claims to have good news for those who have these concerns. The people of that community are invited to enjoy upbeat music with a contemporary flavor. Hear positive, practical messages which will encourage you each week. The attendees are told to feel comfortable at church in casual dress. If you're not disturbed by these compromising, unscriptural, and unreasonable statements, I would wonder about your understanding of the Scriptures and the role of the church in transforming America from the inside out. It appears to me that society is doing the transforming of the church and not the other way around. Do you remember these challenging words? Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Romans 12:2. God designed His church to influence the world for good. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Matthew 5:13-16. How can churches change the world when they fall in with the fleeting fashions of the world? My friends, the world needs transforming, as K. Cole James insists in her excellent book. But political solutions are not going to solve spiritual problems. If we recognize the moral and spiritual condition of our nation, and we will if we keep our eyes open, we know what the solutions are and where they can be found. The Bible furnishes the answers to all the moral and spiritual questions which Americans face. We can stop crime in our streets, the growing problem of teenage pregnancy, the lying and stealing by our public servants, if we teach our young people right from wrong. The teaching has to start in the home, but the church must reinforce what parents and other concerned citizens do. In addition, we must vote out of office those men and women whose moral values are on a par with barnyard animals. We must also trust God for the harvest when we have lived and taught His will. May God bless all of us in helping to find spiritual solutions to spiritual problems. Thank you for listening today, and may our Heavenly Father richly bless you.